Dr. Michael Roizen.
Dr. Michael Roizen.
You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show.
This is the 1005th, 1005B recording of the podcast, You, the Owner's Manual, and we have a wonderful guest for you today. The guest, and he's going to have to explain why I have two names for him, but it's J.W. Freeburg, and he has published written the book, if you will, Surrounded by Others and Yet So Alone, and wants to be called by the name Terry. I should tell you that in this new book, Terry shares case studies that are mined from his law practice to illustrate the dysfunctional bonds that can lead to chronic loneliness. He has been lauded as the Oliver Sacks of law. That's about as high a moniker or a nickname as you can get, because Oliver Sacks was one of the greats of medicine, bringing music into medicine, if you will, and really did some great work. So that's a true tribute. Like Sacks, who was a neurologist, Terry uses a story format to involve us all in real cases that have meaning far beyond their scenarios. His prior book was an award-winning book, Four Seasons of Loneliness. I have not had a chance to read that. So, Terry, it's really weird calling you Terry and J.W. Freeburg. So one is your pen name, I assume, and one is your real first name. But correct me, how did you happen to have two names?
J.W. is my real name, if you like. J. Walter, I have a first initial. But from what I understand, my mother sat on a beach during World War II, pregnant with me, with her girlfriend. And they both conspired to nickname their kids Terry because they thought it was a nice name.
That's a great story. Okay, so Terry, one of the things you do is define loneliness differently, and I found that fascinating because it changes the way we deal with it so much.
Right. I look at loneliness as a sensation. It's not an idea, it's not a thought, it's not an emotion. It's actually a sensation we get from the parietal lobe of our brain, where we get hunger and fear and thirst from. So we feel hungry, we feel thirsty before we think about how to solve those issues, and we feel lonely before we think about, oh my goodness, I really feel disconnected here, I don't have anyone important, and I've got to make some friends. So I see it as a sensation from the animal part of us. We are humans, of course, but we're also animals. And the kind of animal we are is a family-oriented, small pod herd animal, like the cetaceans, like that's the sea mammals, the whales, the dolphins, the porpoises, some of the great apes and elephants, for example. So we're uncomfortable when we're not with other people. That's the strength of a human being, is how to speak and coordinate and cooperate with others to be effective.
Now so someone's trying to be with you, if you so tell me, have our phones and the social media and the TV distanced us? In other words, what I find that many people who live alone, as soon as they get home, will turn on the TV in a mindless way to get noise or, if you will, companionship. Is that common, and how good a substitute is it?
Well, it's a really good question, and like most good questions, the answer is complex. It cuts both ways. We have a wonderful tool for measuring chronic loneliness in society. It's called the UCLA Loneliness Test, and you can find a copy of it on my website, and people can take that test and take a look, an honest, frank look at their own connections with others. So we know which groups in society are most lonely, and the very loneliest groups, the quintiles of our society that test the most lonely, are Generation Z, so that's 18 to 22-year-olds, and Millennials, 23 to 38-year-olds. So since kids have their faces buried in their phones constantly, as we all know, apparently those aren't making the quality connections that one needs to feel linked and secure with others. So on the other hand, I told you it was a complex answer. During this COVID-19 isolation we've all been through, or we're still in the middle of, obviously Zoom, FaceTime, their equivalents, have been wonderful tools to allow some contact, even with face view, of family members and dear friends. So, complex answer to a complex question.
Now, let me just expand on that with, the book has such good stories in it. I'm debating going there versus asking you in general. So one of the things you state is that loneliness is the equivalent of 15 cigarettes a day. I want you to know that's not true. Loneliness is much greater than that. When we analyze the data, I started the Real Age program, which has been a validated program multiple times for mortality and morbidity. Disability, loneliness is the equivalent of about 3 times a pack a day. That is, you can't get at it from just smoking. So smoking is about a 10-year older event from a pack a day, whereas loneliness is 32 years older. So it is the greatest, I think it is the greatest of the stresses, because it counts as equivalent to 3 major life stresses. So tell me about let's go through one of the stories, which I like, is the boy who is older than his parents.
Let me interrupt for one sec. I want to go back. I think your listeners will find this an interesting example that they'll never forget. Whether or not loneliness really hurts, do I exaggerate that in concentrating in 3 books now on the topic? Does it really hurt to be lonely? All you have to do is think about the answer to this question. Which hurts more, a broken arm or a broken heart? We all know the answer to that.
Yeah, it certainly I don't think there's any way of saying there's an equivalence. Obviously, a broken heart, in the sense that you're talking about it, hurts much more. And one of the interesting things is in the era of COVID or the coronavirus or COVID-19, there actually is more broken heart syndrome that is occurring relating to inflammation of the heart and the emotional toll that takes. Let's go and talk about one of the stories, and you can pick out the one you want. I guess the general gist of the book, surrounded by others and yet so alone. How do you rationalize that in today's society? We have all these phones, we have all the social media. You've got a bunch of people looking at social media and responding to it. Even if it's negative responses, you don't feel alone. But it is, I think, more distancing. So do we miss sports? Is that part of our fellowship? How do you rate that?
Yeah, I love the question. Let me back up one step on it. Why did I write this book? And I think the real answer is because I failed to cover these topics in the 2016 in the 2016 book, 4 Seasons of Loneliness. That's 4 stories from the law practice of people, law clients of mine, who were chronically lonely because they were so isolated and disconnected from others. They literally were people who, when they went home, had no one to call, and not a chance they would receive a personal phone call. They didn't care about anyone, and no one cared about them. So that's rather obvious. But what I failed to note and only learned later, was that we in fact have statistics that tell us that about half of all chronically lonely people aren't isolated and disconnected at all. They're married, they have kids, they have siblings and cousins and neighbors and teammates and work colleagues, but they feel as lonely as the disconnected people, as isolated. How can that be? And when I took a look at the literature on that and thought back over the law cases and looked through the files I had from cases over the years, it's a function of the quality of the relationships. Just because one is married and has people around one of different definitions, you know, neighbors and work associates and so on, doesn't mean the relationships are nurturing and significant and protective. People differ in the quality of relationships they make with one another. And so when I look back through the cases, I found five different sorts of law cases that indicated there were sort of five different ways in which people mess up their personal relationships so badly that from an emotional point of view, it's as if they were all alone.
And now, talk to me, the story, I like the story, the boy who is older than his parents. Can you give us a short version of the key elements of that and why you chose that story?
Sure. So that was the most common way in which people have dysfunctional, useless, non-nurturing relationships because they're obstructed. They're so busy. We live in a very busy world, obviously, where just over half of all married women are in the workforce, obviously prior to COVID-19 problems. And we're very busy people with long commutes and relatively long work days when you add the commutes. And so people are not available to one another. They may live next to each other. They may be in each other's lives. They may even have a superficially normal relationship. In that case, there was a very sagacious, wise little 10-year-old boy, and he had two parents who were wonderfully successful people, a money-making venture capital dad and a mom who was the mayor equivalent of a small town on the outskirts of Boston. And they were both so busy with their lives that they couldn't make this wonderful little only child of theirs feel loved. But let me put it as the child put it, because he was way better with words than I am. He said, "When my parents do love, it's like the light that comes out of a flashlight when the batteries are just about to die. It's only a glow. It doesn't help you see in the dark."
So now, how did you help them bridge this problem? Because that's one of the interesting components of that.
A professional friend of mine who's the head of pediatrics at Boston's Children's Hospital called me up and said, "You got to get over and see this wonderful little 10-year-old boy. He's in the cancer ward. He's seriously ill. And just a wonderful fellow." And he says he's got to talk to a lawyer. And you're the only lawyer I know who's also a psychology doctor. Come on over and help me out. So I go and meet this little fellow. He couldn't have had more charm. And he was determined to get those parents to clean out their pipes so that the love could flow through, just like you do on a water pipe that's clogged up. And he asked me if I wouldn't help. And then it turned out the dad was useless. We weren't going anywhere there. That dad was into making money, and everything else was secondary. The mom, however, had a legal problem from far in her past and convinced me if I helped her solve that problem, then she could stop worrying about it. She was highly traumatized by it and had all the typical symptoms of post-traumatic stress disorder from fear that that old crime would come to life and she'd be arrested because she was so visible, that having been elected the mayor equivalent of her town. So I set to work and tried to clear up that 35-year-old legal problem, and that's basically what the story was about.
And what happened? Should we find? Well, let's not give away any of the story. So I should say, and I think I forgot to say, that we are sponsored by Persona Nutrition. So this is episode 1005B, sponsored by Persona Nutrition. You can take personalized supplements, that is personalized just to you. All you do is take a free online assessment. And by the way, if you want to change your package, your diet habits, or your medical concerns change, you can talk to one of their nutritionists. It's free. The packs are organized, so they send you a morning and an evening pack or whatever is appropriate. And you can find out, it's a free test. You find out what you're missing or not. You may not be missing anything in your nutrition. MyPersona.com. Back to talking to about loneliness. So one of the things that I saw in a recent funeral that was done by Zoom, I felt included much more in the conversations because everyone was talking. When anyone talked, you were talking to everyone. And so the counseling, if you will, the group think was actually shared. But when I talked to the people closest, that is the daughter of the person who died and the husband of the person who died, they did not feel that Zoom was any place near as good as the usual process. Do you have any feeling on this? I mean, in other words, healing from at a wake or a funeral is a key component in not feeling lonely, I believe.
Exactly. And the cultural rituals around life change are very important, not just to us, but to every society that I've ever heard of across the face of the earth, now and in the past. So losing the in-person rite, associated with saying goodbye to someone has everything to do with loneliness. Why is that? Because we're all lonely from time to time. We all lose, let's say, our grandparents when we're in our 20s and 30s, our parents, uncles and aunts when we're in our 50s or 60s, friends pass away. Lots of people pick up and move too far away to really deal with much in this highly mobile society. So we all lose people. We're all lonely. That's different from those people who are chronically lonely, just the way everyday sadness is different from clinical depression. But I think what those family members were saying, and I feel for them deeply, is they lost the right. They lost the social procedure by which to say goodbye in the accepted and proper way in our culture, and they felt deprived of that.
So that is obviously one of it's such an interesting thing. Why do you think, if you had to say why loneliness has gotten so prominent? In other words, is it just the busyness of our lives? Is it just the time? Is it part of the fact that we're working on computers more rather than speaking to other people as in getting things done? And if you had to predict, you mentioned that it was the younger groups, the 18 to 38, that are most lonely. Is this a component of the way we're training our workforce?
We have invented loneliness in the last 200 years. It wasn't here. The word loneliness only comes into the English language about 1800. Prior to that, all of our ancestors, all of the ancestors of your listeners, lived in smaller towns or villages or ethnic neighborhoods of smaller cities. Families knew each other. People formed friendships with children of families where the parents all knew each other. They found mates that way. There wasn't social space within which to grow lonely. That's something that we've created in industrial and post-industrial society as we've left these neighborhoods behind and live in massive cities to a great extent where we really don't know much about our neighbors. You might live next to someone who, other than saying hello in the hallway, you'll have no relationship with at all. Let me give you a statistic that'll go right to your question. Today, 35% of Americans self-identify as chronically lonely. In 1990, it was only 20%. That has got to be related to the fact that today, 28% of U.S. households are single-person households. Over a quarter of us, as adults, i.e. not college students, live alone. So we've invented more and more loneliness by the general sociological topography of the society and the economy we live in.
Now, that gives some solutions or some ideas for solutions. One of the things that my daughter did until she got married was she lived with a group of six other people, each with their own bedroom, but they share and bathrooms, but they shared common living space, that is common kitchen, common dining, common living room, etc., in common exercise area. Is that a, do you think that's going to become more prevalent as a way of, for the 18 to 38 year olds to deal with this feeling? And to deal with the problem? Or is that just a rare event? In other words, do you think we will... one of the things I was talking to a builder about, he's building homes that are this, that have six to 12 bedrooms, six to 12 bathrooms, a couple guest bathrooms in addition. It's expensive plumbing, but cheap per person. And he said, because they're single people, but they want to share spaces. Is he just unusual, or is that community just unusual? Or do you think that's one of the ways of solving this, or is that just an artificial solution right now?
Well, I think it's fascinating. I haven't heard that before, but it certainly is an effort to connect with others. Think about the fact that you don't have to go back more than about four or five generations for any of us, no matter where our families came from. When they lived in these towns and villages and ethnic neighborhoods, they grew up around their family. People grew up around their cousins. In the new book, there's a footnote where I found the statistics on people moving from state to state in the United States, and it's massive. We don't necessarily grow up around our cousins anymore. That was absolutely not the case three or four generations ago. Your basic circle was all about your family. I'm thinking of a wonderful a movie, I don't know the name of it, I saw years ago, where a Hispanic woman falls in love with a white gentleman, and they have a lovely relationship, but they're so different on one point that she says to him a line I've never forgotten. She says, "We can't go on. It's not going to work. Because for me, family is the sea I swim in. For you, family is an inconvenience at holiday time." So this is a brilliant line, I thought. And so that's the... the example you gave of building a multi-person household, let's not get in a circumstance where we live alone. Let's put a whole group of people in a collective house where we can see each other in the living room or the exercise room. It's a brilliant idea. I like it a lot, but let's face the fact that family, having lots of nurturing, wonderful, protective friendships is a good thing and part of what life is all about. But another part of life is the solidity that comes from family. I've done a lot of thinking during these events and written some articles on grandparents, for example, because I'm a grandparent and I can't see my grandchildren during this coronavirus problem, as is the case with gracious knows how many grandparents across this country. And when I think about what grandparents supply to kids, it's reminded me of high school geometry. Is that what it was? Geometry class, I think, when they taught us that it takes two points to define a line. But I think the role of grandparents is because it takes two generations to define a lineage. Your grandparents introduce you to the family you had in the past. even those who are gone now. So with stories and photographs, you're linked to the past, and the family to the human psyche is very similar to what the roots provide to a great big tree. They hold it in place when the storms come. And so it's great to have friendships. It's obviously crucially important to have friendships. They draw you out from your family and bring you new experiences and new linkages with different people, different ideas. That's all great. But one can't ignore the importance of family. I think it's a great cost when people move away and lose contact with their own family. And that's the, I think, one of the lessons of this is use these media, these wonderful media that we have where you can see the face while you speak, to stay in contact with parents and grandparents, or if you're a little bit older, with siblings and cousins, even while advancing friendship opportunities, which your builder friend seems to have a very clever idea about how to do.
I will pass that on. I want to thank you. We're talking to the author of Surrounded by Others, Yet So Alone. It's a really compelling set of stories about, five sets of stories told in a compelling way that bring out the point that we've just been making about loneliness being so common and some of the solutions that one could try. Surrounded by Others, Yet So Alone by J.W. Freiberg, Freiberg. It's by Philia, Philia Books, Ltd. is the publisher. J.W., or Terry, as your mom was wont to say, thank you very much for coming on. I should mention again, we are sponsored by MyPersona.com, personalized nutrition that you can depend on. Take the free test at MyPersona.com. Talk to the nutritionist there. Find out what you want to find out about supplements and nutrition. They have a vast array of knowledge. MyPersona.com. It's free to both take the test and talk to the dietitians and nutritionists there. Thanks also to Joe for engineering, but especially to our audience for downloading us. 50,000 of you a week makes it an awful good thing. Remember, Surrounded by Others, Yet So Alone by J.W. Freiberg. Great stories. Thank you very much, Terry, and thank you for downloading us.